Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Do you remember how you handled your first rejection, your first failing grade, or your first real setback? Maybe you got some advice like this.
I'm going to tell you what my mother told me when I wanted to quit cheerleading. You're not very pretty, you have no boobs, and you can't do a basket toss to save your life, but you made a commitment. So pick up your pom-poms, Pierce, stuff your bra, and get ready for the team bus to forget you at a Taco Bell, because life is tough.
Okay, so maybe you're not taking your advice from NBC's Community, but some colleges and universities now are actually trying to teach students how to fail well. But can you really teach such a skill? And if you can, is college too late a place to do that? We've got two perspectives on this topic. Joining us is Rachel Simmons. She's author of The Curse of the Good Girl, Raising Authentic Girls with Courage and Confidence. She also ran the Failing Well initiative at Smith College last year. And we should note that Rachel is not representing Smith College, but she is an expert on the topic of teaching failure. Rachel Simmons, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Frank Ferretti. He is a professor emeritus of sociology and an associate for the Center for Parenting Culture Studies at the University of Kent. His latest book is What's Happened to the University? A Sociological Exploration of Its Infantilization. Frank Ferretti, welcome to you.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
It's very good to have you. Rachel, first of all, talk to me a little bit about this college course on failing well. What does it mean to fail well in college? Why do we have to teach 18 to 22-year-olds this?
Good questions, both. To fail well, I think, means to be able to do two things. I mean, not just to recover from a setback, which is a difficult and skillful, thing to do, but it's also about being able to face unpredictable situations and get through that and be able to capitalize on your curiosity and follow a question you don't have the answer to. And why we need to teach that to college students right now, I think, relates to a lot of factors, one of which is the incredible effort that young people have to exert to get into a four-year college. Any high-achieving youth right now get the message that if they're not perfect, if they're not flawless, then they have failed or somehow will not succeed in life by not getting accepted into a college. And so they don't develop the muscle to be in unpredictable situations or to fail.
So can I just jump in here for a second? Because I just want to make a point, respond to something you said. So are we talking about sort of the elite of America's colleges? Because it brings to mind the fact that, there are a lot of people, many American young people who aren't going to those colleges. And by fact of their lives, they have had to face failure a lot.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you called attention to that. One thing we're seeing is that across the board, UCLA has a national freshman survey, and they survey 150,000 first-year college students at over 200 schools across the country. And we're seeing unprecedented levels of depression and anxiety and students saying they're overwhelmed. Now, while that doesn't directly relate to how well they fail, it's pointing to a decline in wellness that I think really isn't about privilege, but is about something deeper that's afflicting adolescents right now. So I also want to say that we know at Smith that so many of our first-year students show very high levels of resilience, particularly those who come from marginalized communities, those who are first-generation students. So we're not saying everybody's struggling with this, but we know a lot of them are.
Right. Okay. So Frank Ferretti, let me turn to you. I think the subtitle of your book, A Sociological Exploration of It's being the university's infantilization, kind of says it all. Do you think that the need to teach how to fail well is a problem or a solution to the problem?
Well, I think it's partially the creation of a problem, because one of the most exciting and challenging dimensions of individual development is when you're confronted with the experience of disappointment and distress. It seems to me that many schools, many universities are not, in a sense, attempting to short-circuit the process through which young people manage to, with their risk, deal with these kinds of problems and begin to learn how to deal with them. And it seems to me that there are experiences in the world that people have got to learn for themselves rather than have somebody, in a sense, colonizing their internal life.
Well, I guess perhaps what Rachel is saying is that they're not getting those experiences before or adequately before they come to college.
Well, if they don't, that's because even already in schools there are far too many initiatives that medicalize young people's experience. And instead of dealing with existential problems in the language of everyday life, we give them therapeutic diagnosis and solutions. So as a result, I remember my own son coming home at the age of 6 and 7 from school and already using words like I'm feeling depressed, I'm stressed, using psychological language to the point at which he sounded like a young Sigmund Freud. And that's things that he picked up in school. So if we are going to be continually intervening in their life through therapy, it's not surprising that they, by the time they get to university, they're going to have mental health problems. It's a kind of helplessness that's been cultivated by their socialization.
Well, let me turn back to Rachel Simmons, and what's your response to that?
Well, I guess I want to crack a joke about New England, where we often don't like to feel our feelings. I would say I'm not in the business of therapizing young people, and I don't espouse the belief that if we just sort of turn the other way and let our students be beset by crises, they'll just figure it out on their own. I think my goal is to help students have the very experiences that I think we're talking about here, as you said. And I'll just give you one example, okay? We know that young people have an overthinking problem. They ruminate. We know that young women disproportionately do that. And by we, I mean the research bears this out. And what that looks like is a student raises her hand in class, gets the wrong answer, goes back to her dorm room and sits there and goes, why did I say that? I can't believe I said that. Why, you know, what am I going to do? What does this teacher think of me? Everyone thinks I'm so stupid. That kind of perseveration prevents her from going back to class the next day and trying again. Come to a Failing Well workshop at Smith, you're going to learn how to manage that so you can go back out there and keep getting the wrong answer.
So how do you manage that? Because what you just described to me seems like the accumulation, I mean, to Frank Ferretti's point, of 18 years of programming and a culture surrounding students that leads to that. How can you undo 18 years worth of stuff?
I don't think it's really undoing. I think you're teaching students things like how to breathe and get out of their heads, teach them mindfulness. I have one student who created a little box where she puts her perseverating thoughts. I mean, to me, this isn't about infantilizing students. It's about helping them free them up so that they can be curious and fail well. It really is about helping students achieve their potential, not hold them back from it. And I think anyone who hangs out with undergraduates, high school students, sees that they're really struggling. So to turn away from that and say, hey, you guys can just handle that on your own, stiff upper lip, that doesn't feel right to me as an educator or, for that matter, as a parent.
Yeah. So Frank Ferretti, let me ask you, I mean, part of the view of what college is supposed to be is also a time for the flowering of the self, the exploration of the self. I mean, perhaps that's an overly romantic view of college vis-a-vis the 1960s, but you take my point. So why wouldn't this kind of training, these kinds of seminars fit into that?
Well, I'm a big fan of exploring the self and the kind of things that Rachel described, which is where you go away and say, well, why did I say that in the classroom? Why didn't I say something else? Is what we call having an internal conversation. And having an internal conversation rarely yields positive results. It doesn't have immediate positive outcomes. But in the long run, through the process of exploring your own inner thoughts and discussing it with your friends, you gain the kind of insights that are not possible to replicate through the template courses that are offered in different universities.
I have to jump in. I have to respond to that, because what we're talking about here is an internal conversation that is circular, that's associated with the loss of motivation, with lower academic performance, elevated anxiety and depression. I don't think we're talking about a productive internal reflective conversation here.
Yeah,
we're talking about rumination.
I'm not sure that, you know, we're gods, these people like yourself and myself who can, from the outside, make these kinds of judgments. And the one thing that we know very clearly is that these kinds of interventions don't work in the long run. And we know that for the very simple reason that the more of these classes that we have in universities, the more mental health seems to be, as a problem, seems to be running in parallel with it. And it seems to me that after 3-4 decades of these kinds of interventions, we would ask the question, well, you know, why do we continue it when all it seems to do is actually disorient young people? You know, it gives them temporary relief for a couple of weeks, but when they leave university, they feel far more insecure, far more disoriented, far more anxious than would have been the case otherwise. And I know that you and others have the best of intentions in carrying out these classes, But one of the things we learn from existential philosophy, one of the things we learn from a genuine struggle to come to terms with our identity, is that at the end of the day, you know, this is stuff that we have to carry out on our own, not because we believe in a stiff upper lip, but because we understand that the stretching yourself through dealing with difficult challenges may have painful consequences in the short run.
Let me just turn back to
a bit of independence.
Yeah, Frank Ferretti, if I can just turn back to Rachel Simmons, because I wanted to give you a chance to respond. Frank said a lot
there. I feel like it's a bit of a facile argument to say that the programs are causing the distress. I think that we have a lot. In fact, The Atlantic magazine just ran a cover story by the psychologist Jean Twenge, who studies generational trends, looking at the decline in emotional wellness. She sources it to the rise of the smartphone, which Twenge argues is causing students, young people, to spend so much less time together. They're less connected, and she makes a very compelling argument about that. I mean, I would throw into the mix that you have students who spend a lot more time working, stressing out. You have a lot of students who aren't doing chores at home, who don't feel purposeful about the contributions that they make to their homes or to their world. There are so many different factors that I think have led to this unhappiness. I just have a hard time believing that the programs cause it.
Can I just jump in here? Because, I mean, you were talking about purposefulness. A while ago, we talked to Julie Lithcott-Hames, who's the former dean of students at Stanford. She's written a book about how to raise an adult, and she identifies basically early parenting as a problem here. And I understand, you know, we're talking about college age students and how to teach how to fail well there. But I keep coming back to this notion, and we just got about 60 seconds here, that, you know, maybe we ought to be looking earlier and we're further upstream here.
We should. And I think Julie's book is excellent. I would also recommend listeners to Jessica Leahy's book, The Gift of Failure, which talks a great deal about what parents can do at a young age to empower their children to be purposeful and to be comfortable with mistakes. So I agree with you. We have to start younger so that by the time students go off to school, especially residential colleges, they're not facing these challenges for the first time.
And Frank Ferretti, we've just got about 10 seconds or 20 seconds here. Your last thought?
Well, I think I agree that we've got to start early, but let's not start too ambitiously. It's far better to give children space to explore and to experiment and to take risks. And I think that adult intervention in children's lives tend to be counterproductive, both by parents and by educators. And I think that, to me, is the lesson of the last experience of the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah. Well, Frank Ferretti is a professor emeritus of sociology and an associate for the Center for Parenting Culture Studies at the University of Kent. His latest book is What Happened to the University. Frank Ferretti, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Rachel Simmons is the author of The Curse of the Good Girl, Raising Authentic Girls with Courage and Confidence. She also teaches classes and workshops around student emotional intelligence, communication, and confidence. Rachel, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.